Hey, how's it going? How's your theater going experience there?
It was in a theater and I had an experience.
That good, huh?
I wouldn't say I had a bad time.
On a scale of the movie Popcorn to Paul Rubens, where did you fall?
Probably somewhere around Strategic Jujubee.
Yeah. Well, what's some other from a scale of American Werewolf in London to Taxi Driver, how was your theater experience?
I don't even know what this means anymore.
Well, maybe you should loop back to the beginning and tell us who you are.
Ladies and gentlemen, this program is for you, not your children.
What is the meaning of this? You think up your story, I've got mine.
Now, there's only two of us here tonight, and we're going to lock ourselves in my room.
I want to report a murder. Who was murdered?
I was.
I advise you to call this party off now. The ghosts are already moving, and that's a bad sign.
Do you call this a party?
Could be.
Mr. Bill, let's get out of here. Why, this place is a walking cemetery.
Wait a minute, Jeff. What's a zombie?
Stop it. You're ignorant.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Nighthawks podcast. I'm Trevor T. Trujillo.
And I'm Matt Foster.
Yeah, with me is Matt Foster. Why the hell not? We are movie critics over at fanboytv.com, where you can find our print reviews as well as show notes for this and other episodes of the Nighthawks podcast. Episodes of the Nighthawks podcast that at earliest came out 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, what the hell, man?
What were we doing? Why? We blew it. We're really blowing it.
We were enduring incredible life upheaval.
It's true, actually. Yeah. I got a new job. I got a new apartment. We moved out of the Pecan Grove Studios. They were lovely to us. Thank you very much to them. But it's time to move on. And so we are in process of moving into the Jollywood Studios for the Nighthawks home offices. And then you yourself right now are on the road, are you not?
I'm in the scenic mining town of Ely, Nevada. I disclosed that to a friend, and he said, "Well, is there a brothel there?" And I said, "Much as there is a swimming pool in the Gulf of Mexico, there is a brothel here." I'm just kidding. I'm sure it's a perfectly reputable town, and these hills have no eyes.
So you are out and about, and you had to kind of MacGyver a record rig together, and then I'm here on this end. I basically just unpacked as much as I could to get the podcast up and running. The studio area is not set up at all. So, folks, what we're telling you in our own uncertain terms is, we have no idea how this is going to sound coming out the other end. So if we need to, we're going to apologize in advance. Things might get a little earthy.
Jollywood, other end, earthy. Can't do that to me. Yeah, we're not using our usual setups, and our usual setup is in the process of growing and mutating anyway. We have watched this space for smooth sounds to come.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the changes we've got coming to the Nighthawks Cafe. We'll talk about that at the end, but because that's not why people are here. They're not here to talk about the cafe. They're not here to talk about us.
Now they're going to be in suspense the whole time. Were they purchased by Adam Carolla? Are they going to put ads in it?
Well, these answers and more will be coming to you at the end of the episode. But what people want it? People don't want to hear that. It's not going to be a big deal. People want to hear about Batman v Superman.
Yeah, that's our
colon
that's
Dawn of Justice.
Our reason for being here today. This edition is NH, M versus T, Dawn of Juice Box. I don't know. We both watched a movie with a long name.
Yes, Batman v Superman, : Dawn of Justice, also affectionately shortened to BVS DOJ.
As I like to call it, Beavis Dodge.
Well done. Well done.
This movie sucks. I don't know. I don't know. Did you pay for this movie?
No, actually. I had a leftover Alamo Drafthouse gift certificate. I won a Tabasco chugging competition during the Nick Cage marathon at the Alamo Drafthouse Cinemas. None of that I am making up, by the way.
So you endured two forms of terrible pain for that ticket.
I say it was worth it.
What's next year? Do you have to sit in bees?
There was one year I did have to eat a shot glass full of Cool Ranch flavored crickets.
I think there should be a contest where an owl sits on your head. In honor of the Nicolas Cage bird head meme. Whoever can sit there the longest without their owl making them bleed or flying away is the winner.
Okay, I'll suggest that. I'll make that suggestion to yes. Greg McLennan.
Put it in the suggestion box.
But anyways, no, I did not pay for this movie. It was paid for. It just didn't come out of my pocket. So did you pay for the movie?
No, I was in similar straits. I had a friend share some corporate tickets with me. So I got to he had a raft of eight in a row. So I did not have to actually pay either. Did you feel you received value for your purchase price of free?
Yeah, I was about to say that almost completely kicks us out of being able to rate this movie as consumers. You know what? Okay, here's the thing. Cut to the chase. I'm gonna lay it all on the table here. There is a lot of controversy about Batman v Superman : DOJ. Because it came out, critics saw it, and they were not kind.
No,
This has a very low rating on the RottenTomatoes.com, the kind of critic aggregate.
But a much higher rating on the fan aggregate, which although that is typical.
Yeah, see, there's there seems to be a lot of pushback against the negative press that it's gotten. And so there is a separate but equal camp of people who absolutely love this movie and think it's the best movie since Citizen Kane. Now, I'm going to tell our listeners, you heard it here first, folks. Neither of these is true. They are both wrong. This is the pinnacle of middle of the road average. You shouldn't hate this movie. You shouldn't love this movie. Really, the fact that we're giving it the time to talk about it is almost questionable.
Yeah, but there is some good stuff here to talk about. And I mean, it's better than any given installment of the Transformers.
Okay, I'll give you that. And see, and that's the thing. It's not the worst movie anybody's ever seen. I'm not even going to have to reach into like a real stinker. I don't have to compare it to Manos to show you it's a good movie.
I look after the place when the master's away.
And it's not the greatest movie of all time. It's not even the greatest movie of this year. Because Green Room hasn't come out yet. So, really, if you're on the extreme about this movie, seriously reconsider. Make sure you're not just hopping on the internet bandwagon. You know, we live in a divisive society, and in modern times, there is very little room for lukewarm. Not many people find things lukewarm. You know, they love it or they hate it, and you don't have to. It's you don't have to. It's a beautiful thing to be kind of middle of the road. And Batman v Superman, DOJ, is the definition of middle of the road.
Yeah, I thought Beavis colon Dodge was, I guess I'd give it a solid C. I had the thought while sitting in it that I would really like this movie when I was like 13, that this was a good, it was an edgy Batman, but not edgy enough to actually scare you. it was dark, but no darker than say the Tim Burton one. And it didn't, what am I trying to say? When we were kind of pre-gaming this review, I asked you, what is a term that means the opposite of greater than the sum of its parts? Because this movie is a lot of really kick-ass parts. Maybe too many parts are shoved under the hood, and it's like one of those little tuner Subarus you see where the kid has done a bad job bolting everything together.
No, it's like a bunch of gears and cogs and clockwork. And they're really high quality, and they look really good. People just kind of dumped them into a box and failed to turn them into any kind of functional machine. Batman v Superman, DOJ, fails to come together as a cohesive and functional movie. Here's what let's do. Let's talk about the movie in very general terms, so if people haven't seen it, they can at least listen to this much. You know, we got to give them a little something. They've been sticking with us. It's their first show in 6 weeks. It's our first show in 6 weeks. But then we'll throw up our famous spoiler curtain, and then we'll finish talking about the movie for people who've seen it. How does that sound?
Okay. I'm down with that. Are you ready for my behind the actor's studio? Beavis Colin Dodge is a meandering, rambling, well-intentioned but ultimately excessively rococo and Rube Goldbergian attempt at a meta-human tragedy.
This is what you were working on the other night when you were writing?
No, I just thought of that.
Okay.
I'm like Kanye, man. All my thoughts are sick raps. No, I mean, there's a lot here worked. I really liked particularly the visual design of Batman and Superman, and I guess it's in the trailer, so not a spoiler, of Wonder Woman. Like, the three principal characters looked really good. Mm-hmm. And I like, and this is something some people had a problem with, but I like these characters juxtaposed at these points in their career. The seasoned Batman versus the very new Superman. I think that's interesting, and I thought there was a lot of grist in it. Because, you know, and I remember I warmed up to the movie a little bit after I slept on it, and I remember kind of thinking the next day, maybe that's not the superhero movie we want, but it's the superhero movie we deserve. Because Batman, I mean, it's the story of a reactionary billionaire changing his stance on immigration.
Yeah.
So it could prove important to our dialectic eventually. I don't know. I think that a lot here could have worked, but it fell prey to a little bit of Snyderitis.
Yeah, here's what I'm going to say is I agree with you. I think there's a lot of great parts here. They were not glued together in any kind of cohesive order. Zack Snyder, I don't know if he was meddled with. I don't know if he just phoned it in. But I will tell you what, Zack Snyder has done a couple of movies I really liked. Zack Snyder has done a couple of movies I didn't like so much. But I will go to my grave saying that Zack Snyder is better than this. Because this movie is put together like ass.
I thought,
like, hot, warmed over.
Well, I definitely like there's a weird like the editing doesn't like, and this is the kind of thing that a lot of people that don't watch like seven movies a week while taking notes, this is the kind of thing they wouldn't really notice or harp on. But like, there's no duality to the editing. Like, they don't edit in parallel. It's not Superman gearing up for battle, Batman gearing up for battle. He talks to his lady friend. Like, it's just weird. Like, it'll dwell on one of them for a while, then bounce to Lex Luthor doing something, then bounce to the other one, back to the same one. It doesn't do a good job of giving them their arcs equal time. And there's, like, what, two, there's three, are there four dream sequences in it?
There's a lot, and I will say this. Any time in this movie spent on a Batman dream sequence is time wasted.
Three, and one's a dream within a dream. And then Superman has one, which was just cheerfully an excuse to just break Kevin Costner out of his glass case again.
Well, and you know, one of the dreams for Batman is a big action beat. And I always thought that was cheap. I've always thought shoehorning an action scene in and making it an anchor action scene and making it a dream was always weak sauce. And it really doesn't work here because it's cool if you're a fan and you know your canon. It makes a little bit of sense, but it has no business as far as the arc of the movie goes. There's this weird post-apocalyptic, I call it Batmax, scene where Batman is in a post-apocalyptic hellscape and looks and fights like Mad Max and uses a gun a couple of times, which a lot of people have found disquieting.
But it's supposed to be sort of he's the last, the rebel leader leading the last pocket of resistance against a tyrannical Superman in some sort of imaginary future that he's being shown through sort of oracular vision by, that's for behind the spoilery curtain. I mean, the plot synopsis here is fairly basic. Batman sort of feels Superman is too volatile and too independent to be controlled or to be dealt with, and he needs some sort of controlling factor or limiting factor. They should have some contingency plan to deal with him. Or
Superman, in the meantime, as you said, is the world's only true libertarian.
Yeah, he's a sovereign citizen who has sort of declared himself above everything. And then Clark Kent, the character, is also questioning the actions that a lot of fans questioned at the end of Man of Steel, where quite a bit of many bystanders were endangered. And so he's deciding sort of on his, you know, second or third real outing as Superman here, just what sort of Superman he will be. We always talk about the exact degree to which they should reboot these things. I think that's an interesting point in his super career, because we're always shown the very confident Superman. And this is sort of a guy that he hasn't decided how authoritarian to be yet, or how much to work with the government yet. And I thought it was kind of neat to see him in the process of making those decisions, but the movie's just a little overstuffed, and it didn't get dwelt on. And then, conversely, the other thing that happens is in the process of resolving the movie, Batman ends up using very similar decision-making to Superman when he was fighting Zod in Man of Steel, and ends up endangering some civilians and sort of softening his stance on Superman. And that also has a lot of grist in it and could be a cool arc, but also just didn't get enough time for itself. This movie felt really like a couple of scripts grafted together.
It really did. I think a lot suffers. I think there's a lot of things built up to that would have been cool that just didn't pay off. And I have to say, with the exception of one, shoehorning this into a launch platform for Justice League was a mistake. There's like I said, with the exception of one, there's not a scene in here that isn't that is a Justice League setup that isn't out of place and tacked on. It's really tragic. I mean, we see some cool stuff. You know, we get a glimpse of the Flash. We get to see just a little bit of Jason Momoa, Khal Drogo's Aquaman, who looks very cool. But it just slows the movie down and is so out of left field.
Yeah, the only cameo that's really integral to the plot in any way is Wonder Woman.
And Wonder Woman, I actually think I enjoyed a great deal to the point where it kind of brought up the movie a little bit in my estimation.
Yeah, for the short time that she's in it. And I also clearly, you know, everyone raised an eyebrow at that woman's casting.
Gal Gadot,
She's too little to play Wonder Woman. It should be... Gina Carano was tossed around a bunch. I liked her in a couple of the action things she's been in, but she is not a franchise actress. Like, her acting chops are a little, you know, I'd put them in... If she's in a movie with Arnold and The Rock, like, I think Arnold might be able to out-act her. And she would have brought a lot of physical veracity to the part, but this girl does... this woman does a good job of... Get it, because she's Wonder Woman. Like, I did that on purpose. She does a very good job of... For one thing, she was clearly cast for her height. Because, you know, Cavill and Affleck are tall in real life. And if they'd have gone with a, you know, average height actress, she would have just... she would not have looked like Wonder Woman in between them. And
yeah.
And... this way, with the three of them all being eye level, it helped with some of the blocking and stuff, and made her really look like an Amazon warrior, especially in that historical stuff that was in there.
Yeah, they give her kind of a cool little, just a hint of a backstory.
But
there is also a lot of backstory that I think is implied that we could have used, that I think was left out either by chance or by design. I mean, we're kind of left hanging with a lot of stuff, especially like Batman's backstory. Oh,
should we hit the button on that spoiler siren? All right, final letter grade before we sound the siren. I give it an approximate C. Just if you're listening, deciding if you should decide to see it before you hear spoilers, I would say, unlike Avengers, which is like grandpa and young Billy and everybody can all go to it together. This is more of a comic nerd movie. Like, if you are a Batman Superman fan, this is a pretty good reenactment of the a lot of stuff from the comic. You'll see specific things from the comics that you'll like seeing on the big screen. If you're not as much of a comic fan, this might not be the particular superhero movie to spend your one superhero ticket of the year on.
Green Room opening this month.
Yeah, well, those aren't superheroes, but that.
No, they're American heroes.
I would like to have seen Green Lantern in Green Room. Well, what can you make? I can make green chew toys. Perfect. There's like three people that have seen Green Room that are like, oh too soon. Yeah, what would you say? Anything to add before we spoil?
Yeah, this movie, I think, catches a lot of the shit that it does because people were disappointed, because it has a ton of potential. Like we say, there are elements of this that are interesting and fun to watch that just don't live up to their own hype, and so you're disappointed.
But isn't that perfect for the theme? maybe it's perfect meta. Maybe it's completely intentional.
Maybe. I don't know. One can hope.
All right, but
I just don't give Zack Snyder that much credit. But yeah, it's just I guess watch it if you're interested.
Slap
it
the
wouldn't
button.
Kill you to wait until the cheap seats.
Yeah, should we slap the button?
Let's hit the button.
Warning. Warning. Spoiler contamination imminent. Clear the area. Spoiler warning. Spoiler warning.
All right, spoiler 30, Matt. Spoiler 30.
All right, here's for the people that stuck with us. Here's the thing we were kind of talking our way around. Batman and Superman quarrel, and a quarrel engineered by Lex Luthor. And as they are sort of working their differences out in a manly fashion, along comes Doomsday. He's a Kryptonian villain, and in this movie, rather than his canonical origin, he is made from the body of General Zod from Man of Steel, who unfortunately never gets to be conscious, because I would have really liked to see Michael Shannon actually play Doomsday. But Doomsday is sort of a non-vocal Sasquatchy type thing. And of course, as soon as the Kryptonian supervillain shows up, all talk of controlling or censoring Superman has gone out the window. And now it's, do what you want. Please stop Doomsday ASAP. Doomsday as an effect is lackluster. And he kind of pokes a little bit of a hole in the movie. Although, as choppy as the editing is throughout, it's not glaring. Like, it's not... I watched the Edward Norton Hulk this afternoon, and it's not nothing that bad, you know. And I didn't think that was bad at the time, but... Doomsday is a large CGI character, and as such, he does disrupt the movie a little bit. And... I don't know. It's just something in the execution felt a little... Like, the Flash brings the Bat Dream to Batman. He brings that Batmax dream to him from the future, or from an alternate universe. We don't really know with the way DC continuity works. It's like, so, did he dream that the Flash brought it to him, or did the Flash quantum leap into his dream? How does all this work? Is it real, or is it just like the premonition of bad prenatal care in the prequel trilogy, where you're just like, he had a feeling and decided to try to kill Superman? That seems premature. I have to reiterate, though, I liked this Batman. Affleck really sold me Affleck as Batman. And I even bought Affleck as a kind of bored, disdainful Bruce Wayne that doesn't think much of the paparazzi or of public life. And I'm sure he's got a deep vein of real life to mine there. I loved seeing the Bruce Timm color palette in real life.
Yeah.
And I think this is a nicely modernized look for Superman too. And I have to say, these guys physically, they look the part, you know. Affleck and Cavill look like if they scrapped, there'd be damage to the drywall. And one element of this I loved is that there's no screwing around with do they know who they are. They immediately spot each other in a crowd and peg each other for noteworthy.
Yeah, they Zack Snyder just does not play the secret identity game.
Well, it's so dopey. I mean, when one of them is patently capable of mentally removing a pair of glasses and the other one can see through his clothes to the bat gadgets, there's just no getting around it. What did you think of Jesse Eisenberg as young
Matt? I'm here to tell you, in the vein of good things and bad things, I will say this about Jesse Eisenberg. Jesse Eisenberg plays the absolute best, incredible, embodies the character, mind-blowingly inhabitive performance of the Riddler that I have ever seen in my life. Yeah, see, obviously what I'm driving at is that Jesse Eisenberg was not playing any Lex Luthor that I'm familiar with. And we've never had a really particularly faithful interpretation of Lex Luthor on the big screen. Because we had Gene Hackman, who played him as this kind of really jokey, comical thief and real estate swindler.
Lex Luthor, the greatest criminal mind of our time.
And then we had Kevin Spacey, who was the best Gene Hackman I've ever seen since Gene Hackman.
Kitty, what did my father used to say to me?
You're losing your hair?
Before that.
Get out.
He said, you can print money, manufacture diamonds, and people are a dime a dozen, but they'll always need land. It's the one thing they're not making anymore of.
But the United States...
will be under water. It's simple physics, Miss Lane. Two objects cannot occupy...
He was still playing him as that kind of campy...
You know, honestly, I blame Netflix's Daredevil for this.
I'm not a religious man, but I've read bits and pieces over the years. Curiosity more than faith. About this one story. It was a man. He was traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was set upon by men of ill intent.
The best Lex Luthor we've seen on TV is Vincent D'Onofrio's Kingpin. Like, it's too late. There already is one. And the problem is, in real life, you get a big bald guy to play a tycoon. You can't draw him different. Like, you know. But,
you know, I always liked Michael Rosenbaum from Smallville.
You know, I did too. And I think he'd have done it again.
You and I. We will both be great men. Because of each other. We have a destiny together, Clark. Only on different sides. And I'll always be there to stop you. Always. Oh, I'm counting on it.
I think he'd have been happy to. Or Armie Hammer, who's fresh off of working with Cavill in Man from U.N.C.L.E., which was kind of... It sort of slipped through the cracks because it wasn't... It was a weird movie. It was one of those movies that the comedy was too... It was too dark to be what it was trying to be. And it was too... violent to be pure comedy, and it was just kind of I liked it because it's one of those weird sort of Euro Archer with fewer jokes kind of European heist movies that you don't get anymore. But he was another one that was batted around to play Lex Luthor and then not settled on. But and Eisenberg is what he's doing here is he's camping up his Mark Zuckerberg from The Social Network.
Do you know the oldest lie in America, Senator? The devils don't come from hell beneath us. They come from the sky. Black and blue. God versus man. Day versus night. The red capes are coming. The red capes are coming.
And to tell you the truth, it really grated on me for the first half of the movie. But there's a scene where Lex gives a speech at a charity function and kind of stumbles in public and sort of reveals that he's kind of mad or maybe has a little touch of the Tourette's or something. And he just kind of babbles part of his evil plan in public. And you're like, oh, this guy's genuinely eccentric. And the reason that people are tolerating this really antisocial behavior is because he's rich. And from that point on, I got the characterization a little more. But he was definitely giving Shannon in Man of Steel some scenery chewing competition for the first half of the movie. I would say overall, I liked this more than I didn't like it. It worked for me. It's definitely like you can't take a complete dump on it. These people that are saying like this is the Hitler of movies, it killed my childhood 6 million times, you know, that are just out here using all kinds of hyperbole against this. This is a competently made popcorn summer movie. It's at least as good as any given Transformers installment, like I said before. It's better than Jurassic World, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'd give that to you by a very slim margin, but yeah.
Come on, man. Superman didn't train no damn Velociraptor.
I will say I liked it just a hair better than Age of Ultron.
The only way that Jurassic World works for me as a film is if it is in the Marvel continuity. And it is like, he obviously, if you're Star-Lord, you can train all kinds of alien creatures. No, I don't quite know what to say about the backlash because I liked what I saw on screen. I really enjoyed, and I was a skeptic. I was like, oh, they're tacking on Batman. I bet they're going to do the exosuit fight when Batman poisoned him with kryptonite and then fist fought him like a Ron Swanson. Honest to God, that part worked on screen. That was the real climax of the movie. It was never. And then the other thing I didn't like is mechanically, I didn't like that Doomsday had that weird bubble. The way Doomsday is visualized in this is whenever he's hit with an attack, he just builds up a sort of pulse of energy that is kind of his manifestation of Kryptonian heat ray vision. Mechanically, he works a lot like the end of the world machine in the terraforming machine at the end of Man of Steel. And that was done so that, storyboard structure-wise, it was done so that Batman could repeat Superman's mistake and realize Superman wasn't that bad of a guy, and they could be bros and have a Justice League. I just didn't, it was too repetitious, and it wasn't, it didn't work as well for me. Although I did like a lot of great specific visuals from the Death of Superman comics, like the desiccated, drained Superman floating in orbit, and so, some of those visuals we got that were right out of the comics. And that was, you know, that was a great thing. That drew me to 300 and to Sin City. I think part of what sort of guided Snyder through 300 is 300, the graphic novel, is a storyboard. And Snyder read it and he followed it and said, oh, the people that are coming, this movie's pretty niche at the time, was the thinking. So he's like, I'm going to give the people that buy a ticket to this exactly what they paid for. And I think that worked really well for 300, and it worked here when he did it.
That's the thing. I'm going to keep saying it. It's a right down the middle of the movie.
Yeah.
It doesn't know who its audience is. It tries to please everybody, so in the end it ends up pleasing none. It's a mess. It's a hot mess. It's exactly what it is. I get what that means now. This is a hot mess.
Yeah. It's something like it doesn't have the bomb factor. Like, it doesn't have the Ishtar, you know, everything in this went off the rails for no reason. It's has a beginning, middle, and end, but it's just a little scattershot. It's the cinematic equivalent of the scene in Unforgiven where Clint Eastwood can't hit anything with his pistol, so he goes and gets a shotgun. It's just, we're gonna throw the things you like at you. I think that was okay. If you took your, you know, teenage son to this because he wanted to see Superman, because he wanted a superhero movie, it would serve. And it has enough depth that your brain doesn't turn to pudding while you watch it. But it's just not... It's frustrating because you sit there as an audience member, and I mean, to a degree, we all do this and we're all full of shit when we do it. But you're sitting there watching that going, man, I could have put these scenes in order a little better. You know, I could have. What's that? What's the guy saying in Get Shorty? All you need is someone to put the dot the I's and stuff, man. You know.
Well, we have fully digressed at this point, Matt. So, yeah, final thoughts on Batman v Superman: DOJ. It's unremarkable, and you know that's a
yeah.
It's just
I was. I don't think if you're a fan of the comics, I don't think you'll be disappointed, because you'll see the comics that it's based on brought to life and moving, and that's what you're spending your dollar for. If you're looking for sort of a comprehensible standalone movie, it might not tickle you the same way. It's probably not the movie to introduce non-fans to fandom with. It's kind of dense. And like, where it fits in Batman canon is almost entirely inferred by Affleck's age and the stuff in the Batcave. Oh, final thought. We should talk about Jeremy Irons as Alfred.
Oh, yes, absolutely. God, love Jeremy Irons. If I could meet that man, I'd hug him. I'd hug him for an hour. But yeah, he plays a pretty decent Alfred, but it's not an Alfred we've seen before.
Yeah, it's a very, very complicit Alfred. He's not the cartoon Alfred that is a little disappointed in Bruce Wayne for fighting crime. You almost get a... Like, this is Alfred, the retired MI5 OSS guy that maybe even nudged Bruce Wayne down this path a little bit. And he's definitely not his quote-unquote butler in it, per se. Yeah, and running the Batcave tactical computer and feeding Batman blueprints and data all the time. Very much almost taking on kind of the role Oracle takes on in the comics. And I thought that was all kind of interesting. We didn't get a lot of the Gotham City crew. We didn't see much Gordon or Bullock.
Yeah, that's another problem with this movie. I have no idea at any given point in this film which city we're supposed to be in. There is no sense of place in this movie. Not only that, I spatially can't figure out where Metropolis and Gotham are in relation to each other. Because it should seem like they're a decent distance, but then there's another scene where they're standing on the roof of the Daily Planet looking across the water and seeing the bat signal.
I think they've been conceptualized differently at different times as being somewhere maybe as close as Newark and New York, or maybe as far apart as New York and Boston. But they're definitely both on the Eastern Seaboard, you know.
But I mean, this movie just does a poor job of letting you know what city you're supposed to be in at any given time.
Well, yeah, definitely this movie has plot geography real bad. And given that's a hazard with Superman, who literally can, you know, nip off to Thailand for Thai food if he wants. Which is what I would do with my superpowers if I had them right now. Because I could really go for some of that soup with all the seafood in it. That's what I want right now. That's my craving. Yeah, I will say it got me looking forward to the rest of its franchise. It turned me around on the Affleck Batman as a design and Affleck as a person playing Batman. And it also, I'll tell you what it really, honestly, what it made me turn the corner on more than anything is actually Suicide Squad.
Apparently, though, because of the performance of Batman versus Superman, they're doing some reshoots of Suicide Squad. All right, folks. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Nighthawks podcast. Damn, it feels good to be back, does it?
Yeah, it feels good to be back and or a gangster. we'll try not to ever do that to you guys again. But it was just a lot of life entropy at once.
Yeah.
And but hopefully, we're thinking that Tax Santa might bring us some new recording equipment.
Yeah, so we're going to try and improve some of the environs around the Nighthawks Cafe and hopefully maybe enable ourselves to do our jobs a little better, a little easier. And it's also going to afford us some opportunities we haven't had before. We're talking about in-studio guests. We're talking about in-the-field interviews. We're talking about having some really special people on the show. We're talking about doing some really iconic, wonderful movies.
And maybe making our own dubstep.
Maybe. No. No, I don't.
Maybe?
Okay, maybe.
You should have said no.
Also, folks, things can't last forever. They just can't. And, you know, the internet is a finite resource. As a result of this, we're starting to run out of server space. So we're not making an announcement. We're just making an announcement that we may be making an announcement. That if you're a completist and you like to keep archives of your favorite podcasts, the first episodes of the Nighthawks podcast may slowly be dropping off in the months to come. So we'll keep you apprised of that situation. We're trying to find a workaround. We'll see what we can find as we grow and mature. But right now, maybe a good time to start archiving, maybe. But we'll give you plenty of warning.
You're really committed to that statement there, Captain Macho.
So, Matt, anything you're excited about in the time to come? We're almost at our year-long anniversary.
Yeah, I'm gobsmacked by that. I really, I figured we'd see something shiny by now, as easily distracted as we are.
No, I think this is really working, and people have been talking to me about doing other podcasts, and we've got a few ideas for this podcast, and maybe even a Nighthawk spinoff of some kind that we'll tease right now, and that's all we'll say. Or
yeah, it will actually be Nighthawks at the skate park.
You know, there was one, I almost got a job recently in Bakersfield, California. And I had this idea where Matt would come from Utah and I'd come from California. We'd meet in Vegas and we were going to do, instead of Baywatch nights, we'd do Nighthawks nights. And it's just, it's the Las Vegas version of our podcast. Unfortunately, I didn't get the job, so that can't happen. But it was discussed at one point. So you just, you know, we're always looking for the next greatest thing.
We bring this to you tonight from the top of the incredible Luxor Casino, where we are afraid of heights.
So, yeah, watch this space for details. Changes coming. We've got a few episodes in the can already. We're going to be exploring the strange future, or is it the past, of New York City, with a very special film about some very special punks in a very special gang. And we've also got one from the archives, a lost episode that we found, Indiana Jones style. We quested for it and found it, and it's about a classic film, and I think you guys are going to love that as well. And then we've got the next 30 episodes after that.
Yeah, which we don't know what we'll do after that, because by then we should be out of movies.
They only made so many, you know.
Yeah, there's only five, really. Well, if we completely run out, we'll just do the Big Lebowski every week.
We could do that. We could do a Big Lebowski podcast.
I think we damn near could.
All right, Matt. Well, I think we're going to wrap it up. It's time for coffee and pie at the Nighthawks Cafe. I'm Trevor T. Trujillo.
And I'm Matt Foster.
Find our reviews over at fanboytv.com. You can reach us at Facebook and Twitter. Nighthawks Podcast on Facebook, Nighthawks Pod on Twitter. And get to talking to us. We're taking listener feedback right now. And if you want to make your input known, let us know. Reach out and we'll talk to you.
And we're not taking that feedback lying down, except I am literally lying down right now.
So, yeah, that's going to do it for us. So we are going to sign off because it's almost morning.